are Locked On Yankees, your daily New York Yankees podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Listening to the Locked On Yankees podcast, which is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Stacey Gottsoulias, and I'm the host of Locked On Yankees. I'm a baseball writer turned podcast host, and you may have read my work at places like Baseball Prospectus, The Hardball Times, Sporting News, and the ESPN Sweet Spot blog. You can find us on Twitter at Locked On Yankees, all one word. You can find me on Twitter at StaceGotts. If you're a new listener, hello and welcome. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. I hope you all enjoy today's episode. It is Division Day once again, and joining me on today's show is Gabrielle Starr of Locked On Red Sox. Gabrielle and I did a podcast the end of January, early February, and we talked about a lot of stuff. So it's not going to be a typical previewing the division sort of podcast. We talk about a lot of stuff, so much so that we're dividing it into two episodes. So this is part one. But first, you can get Locked On Yankees, Locked On Red Sox, and all other Locked On podcasts straight to your phone in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Radio.com, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. And when you get into your car, you can tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Yankees.
And we are back for another division day. And this time we've got the rivalry matchup. It's Locked On Red Sox and Locked On Yankees. But ironically, Stace, we've literally done a crossover like a month ago. So here we are again. We're going to talk about a lot of random stuff because we kind of covered a lot of this stuff already at the end of January and the beginning of February. So if you missed those episodes and you want some like hard hitting rivalry talk, like Adam Ottavino, for example, the sleeper team that Stacey and I both thought was, well, being slept on, that was not eloquent at all, but that's fine. January 26th and I think February 1st were rivalry crossover episodes, part one and two. So check that out. But in the meantime, we're here. We're going to talk about something, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, we're closing on in. I mean, it felt like the season was so far away when we did the first crossover, and now we're only 2 weeks away. So the light is at the end of the tunnel, so to speak.
I feel like part of the reason for that was because when we recorded the last week in January, we weren't sure if baseball was going to be on time. Like, I know it was only a month, 5 weeks ago, maybe 6 weeks ago, but it just feels like so much longer. I really couldn't believe when I went to look at which days we had done those crossovers, I couldn't believe it was only the end of January because it feels like we talked 3 months ago. And in between then, we also did a crossover with Javi where we talked about Mickey Callaway. So you and I have talked, besides DMing every day in the group DM, we have recorded together twice in the last 6 weeks.
Right.
5 weeks. Yeah. And here we are again. So I'm sure we'll find plenty. We've got stuff to talk about, though. I feel like we could start with season predictions, maybe. Like, start with the meat, and then we'll devolve into madness as the episode goes on. What do you think?
Sounds good to me.
All right. So we talked a little bit about the Blue Jays being like the sleeper team in our division. How is spring training going for you guys? It's interesting. Our teams are not playing each other once this spring training.
It's funny because I was looking at the scheduling and laughing at the fact that basically the Yankees are playing the Pirates, the Tigers, the Blue Jays and the Phillies, right? I think those are the only teams that are playing. And it feels like they're playing the Tigers every other day. They're playing them today as we're recording this. I mean, I understand because of the COVID stuff, they don't want people traveling too far, even in Florida, because that's, you know, going from Tampa to Fort Myers is a bit of a trek. I mean, some people don't realize how big Florida is.
Yeah.
And you're just thinking, oh, well, they're in the same state. Well, sure. But that's a long bus ride for major leaguers who aren't used to being on buses anymore. So I can understand. But it's very odd. It's odd. Things are going all right, other than, you know, obvious injury problems. You know, losing Zach Britton for as long as they're now saying he's going to be out is a bit of a bummer. But people are looking
other people are looking healthy. The ones that I was really worried about, Corey Kluber, Jameson Taillon, all the other guys that they signed who are recovering from surgeries and, you know, seasons worth of injuries. You know, Gary Sanchez is looking better at the plate. Giancarlo Stanton hit a ball for an out yesterday that nearly crashed Scott Kingery into the wall. It was one of those cartoon-like hits because he hit 120 miles an hour. And it looked as if Kingery was going to go flying into the wall just from the sheer force of the ball hitting his glove. I've never seen anything like that in my life. It's unbelievable.
So that's what your tweet was. Okay.
Yes.
Because I obviously was not watching your game because I was watching my game. And I just saw you, I think you tweeted something like, Kingery, oh my God. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, make a mental note to go back and figure out what happened to Scott Kingery. But then, of course, my brain's all over the place and I did not follow up on that. Now I have to. That sounds like my kind of entertainment.
It was, I mean, the ball went off the bat and my first thought was, someone's going to die. It was hit so hard. And then when it came out, you know, the StatCast thing came out 5 seconds later, it said it was 120 off the bat. And I thought, oh my God, like anytime he hits a ball, it reminds me of Gary Sheffield when Sheff was on the Yankees, he always fouled the ball off to the left side because he was a righty. And I worked at NBC at the time. And I went into the business development department to my friend who headed the department. And I jokingly pitched him an idea. I said, how's this for an idea? Gary Sheffield routinely hits insanely hard foul balls into the third baseline seats and scares the crap out of everyone. How about we do a, like you can do a deal with Sloman Shield and they give out little shields for people to hold up every time he's up. And that's the way you advertise them.
That's brilliant. Honestly, look at you. You're like a non-problematic Don Draper.
And he was like, I don't think they can do that, but that's a great idea.
I will say, all right. So here we are, we're talking about hard hit balls. What is your opinion? I think I can guess, but your opinion on extending the netting in Major League ballparks?
Oh yes. Because right? I'll tell you right now, we have an independent league team 15 minutes from my house. They used to be the Rockland Boulders. They're now the New York Boulders. And, you know, it's cheap to go there. Like you can spend $12 on a seat behind home plate. And obviously they have the net behind home plate. You don't even notice the net within 5 minutes of being at the game. You know, obviously you first notice it and you're like, okay. And then your eyes get adjusted to everything. And I would much rather have a net in my face instead of either my face being broken or being dead from a ball hitting me in my head.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to say, I mean, as somebody who regularly sits behind a netted area at Fenway Park, A, you don't notice it. B, the number of balls that come flying at you, you immediately are grateful for the net because it has just saved your butt. I don't understand anybody who complains. I feel like the Venn diagram of people who complain about the netting and people who complain about wearing a mask is just a circle. Mm-hmm. Because basically what you're saying is that you don't care about protecting yourself or other people.
Yep.
Pretty much.
I had seats in the fifth row of the upper deck at the old stadium, right above the Yankee dugout. Righty batters would routinely hit foul balls up to my area. There was one time Derek Jeter isn't a guy that hit the ball extremely hard. He hit a foul ball that came up to my seats so far that my friend and I kind of dove to each side. She went to her left. I went to my right. And the chair was dented from that ball that hit the back of my chair and went back onto the field.
Oh my God.
I mean, we had time to react because we were up in the upper deck, but when you're lower and you don't have, I mean, you know, people are like, oh, just bring a glove. Okay. Same people would not be able to lift their glove up fast enough to catch a ball.
I mean, do you remember that video of Evan Longoria, like talking to a reporter and the ball comes like right at them? Mm-hmm. The amount of major leaguers who say, I wouldn't be able to react fast enough. Mm-hmm. So like, why are we expecting quote unquote mere mortals to be able to react fast enough? I don't know if you remember this. I was not alive yet, but in the early 80s, Jim Rice saved a kid's life at Fenway Park. A kid got hit by a foul ball by Dave Stapleton. The kid got hit in the head, was bleeding, and Jim Rice jumped out of the dugout, picked up the kid and carried him into the clubhouse. And they took the team ambulance that's always on standby at the ballpark and brought him down to Children's Hospital, which thankfully is literally like right down the street from Fenway Park. The kid had to undergo emergency surgery to relieve the pressure because there was swelling in his brain. Mm-hmm. And he is like now like alive and well, has kids of his own. I wrote a whole article about it like 2 years ago, but anybody who says that extending the netting is a bad idea is both dumb and selfish. That's my hot take, because this is like, this shouldn't be a question anymore. People have died.
Yeah. Oh, you're going to,
somebody died at Dodger Stadium, like in the last 10 years.
I was just going to bring that woman up. Yeah. I don't understand the mentality of not having empathy at all and wanting to make things better for everyone around you. The selfishness of the last year that has been on display from a bunch of people, this pandemic could have been curbed a lot sooner if people used their brains, stayed home, wore masks, did what they were supposed to do. But no, we're into the second March of this thing. The netting is not a big deal, guys. Okay. And I'm saying guys, because most of the people who are against it are men who think they can just hold their glove up and catch
a ball. I have never on Twitter seen a woman object to the netting.
Well, my cousin got hit with a foul ball at a game 2015, I want to say, but it bounced before it hit her. Chase Headley hit a ball and she was sitting in the 200s section of Yankee Stadium, and she was pretty far back. She was probably between first base and the foul pole, but closer to the foul pole. And the ball bounced off, I guess, the walkway and hit her right in the side of the head. And, you know, she made a joke that, you know, it straightened her brain out and now she feels better. But she was in pain for a couple of days after that. And that bounced before it even hit her. I remember being at a Little League game where my brother's friend's mother got nailed with a foul ball that was only hit by a 12-year-old and she had to be taken to the hospital because she nearly broke her jaw. So when you have guys, and it's not even just Stanton, I mean, just a regular ball that gets hit is going to do damage to whoever it hits. And I just don't understand that mentality at all. I really don't.
It's like a basic human compassion and empathy thing now. Like, we don't give people a chance. You don't stop to think that maybe someone just doesn't know something or made a mistake. You just assume the worst all the time. And we are living in a really crazy time, but I don't want to go down that road just because we are sports podcasts. We are here to talk about sports, and you and I could literally rant about the evils of society for 6 hours. But that's not what we're here to do. So we talked about the Ottavino trade when we did our crossover, because that was around the time that it happened. Mm-hmm. I looked it up, and in the last 50 years, there have been exactly 5 trades between our two teams.
Mm-hmm. Very rare thing.
It is rare. I feel like it's, I don't know if it's like the Red Sox are just like, hey, we don't want a repeat of Babe Ruth, or if it's just that our teams never have like anything good to give each other, which I don't think is the case, obviously, but I think that neither team would want to give each other what they want.
Right.
Because there's like that animosity there. I don't know if you probably heard about this, but way, way back, more than 50 years ago at this point, there was discussion of a straight up trade, DiMaggio for Ted Williams.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
No.
I mean, it would have meant that Joe was playing with his brother Dom.
Right.
But can you imagine like Ted Williams going to the Yankees and Joe DiMaggio going to the Red Sox?
Yeah, that's
that sounds like, I mean, I don't
that
know.
That would be like that. What's that show? Is it an Amazon show that if the Nazis won World War II?
Oh, like The Man in the High Tower or whatever.
Right, and it shows how the world would be. Like, how different would the world be if Ted Williams was on the Yankees and Joe DiMaggio was on the Red Sox? That's so freaky to me. I couldn't even imagine.
It's WBUR did like a whole thing about it. And there's also this show. It came from a Stephen King book, actually, that I loved. it basically talks about this guy who is able to go back in time, and his like mission is that he's supposed to prevent the assassination of JFK. And it takes him a couple tries, but ultimately, spoiler alert, I mean, this book came out like over a decade ago, but ultimately he is able to prevent the assassination of JFK, but then he goes back to like his normal time and like everything is messed up. It's a good book. James Franco actually played the guy in the Hulu series of it. And it's really good, but like Joe DiMaggio, five of his first six seasons, the Yankees won the World Series.
Yeah.
I mean, how, like, can you imagine? So basically, apparently what happened was like before the 1947 season, Yawkey was like having a dinner with Dan Topping in New York City. I don't know if they were like drunk or what, but apparently they were actually agreeing on the trade.
I think being drunk is the only explanation.
Right? Like, how do you do that sober? I can't imagine like what the, I mean, wow. It's just so weird to think about.
We've been telling you about Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the market for a while now. Built Bar is the incredible low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, amazing tasting protein bar with 100% chocolate on all bars. Now is the time to find out which Built Bar is the best. It's Built Bar Madness. Yesterday's matchup, and I'm going to discuss this now because if you listen to my show, you know that I love coconut almond. It's one of my favorite bars. Coconut almond was up against peanut butter brownie. Go to builtbar.com or bar_built on Twitter to see today's matchup. Remember, use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. That's LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order at builtbar.com and check back to see who won today's matchup and who will become the best tasting protein bar.
We're covering everything you need to know about the Red Sox and Yankees, but what about the rest of sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Follow the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get podcasts. Okay, so I have a question for you because this is something that's been talked about in Red Sox Nation over the last couple of years. Your team hasn't had a team captain since Jeter retired. The Red Sox haven't had a team captain since Veritek retired. So 10 years for us, 7 years for you, which makes me feel really old that it was that long ago. If you could pick one player on your team now who would be the captain of the Yankees, who would it be and why?
See, that's a tough one. Maybe Aaron Judge out of everyone because...
Wow. Already?
Because, well, only because... You know, Brett Gardner is not going to be there after the season. And he's the longest tenured dude. I'm just trying to think of people who were there.
You have a young team.
It's a young team.
And it's not going to be Gary Sanchez.
No, and it's not going to be Gleyber Torres. And, you know, you wouldn't ever make Aroldis Chapman your captain. You wouldn't you know what I mean? And it took a while for Jeter, you know, the Yankees were without a captain from 95 to 2003. It took a while. And he was, you know, Jeter was the unnamed captain. Like, you knew Jeter was the leader of that team. Even when he was younger, he seemed to run those teams that won in the late 90s. So I don't know. Yeah, it's a young team. It's really hard to pick someone. I would have said a couple of years ago, CeCe Sabathia. And I think he was really like the captain of the team once Jeter left. I think that Gardner and Sabathia kind of took over that role from Jeter. But yeah, that's a tough one. There's too many new guys on the team for there to be a captain. And I, you know, if Judge stays with the Yankees and, you know, he's 30, 31 and he becomes a Yankee lifer, maybe they'll make him a captain. I mean, obviously it wouldn't be right now, but I think he would be the choice.
You know what's crazy? You guys didn't have a team captain between Lou Gehrig and Thurman Munson. So Gehrig was captain until 1939. And then the Yankees didn't have a captain until Thurman Munson in 1976.
And think of all the championships that were won between 39 and 60
I would rather not.
One. Like there were a lot of guys that could have been a captain on those teams.
Like, you know, DiMaggio.
Yogi Berra, DiMaggio, all those guys. Yeah.
I think looking back at it, so I pulled up the pages. I mean, it's Wikipedia, so the accuracy might not 100% be there. But looking at the Red Sox captains and the Yankee captains was much more of a thing in the early era of baseball, like especially pre-live ball era. There were so many Red Sox captains and so many Yankee captains between like 1900 and 1940, for example. And I mean, I know live ball era is 1921, but in the last 50 years, I feel like captainship hasn't really been a thing in Major League Baseball as much as other sports. You know, so the other day, the reason I bring this up is because Xander Bogaerts has been with the Red Sox since 2013 now. He made his debut in their Boston Strong season when he was really young, because he's a little bit older than me. He's 28. He's like one of the longest tenured players. And he's kind of been the unofficial team captain for like the last 3 years or so. They were talking about on the broadcast, is this the year that he actually officially becomes a team captain? And this is something that I push on Twitter when he does anything. Like if he gets walked, I'm like, that's my captain. He hits a grand slam. That's my captain. But Jerry Remy said that being a captain is like not a big deal in baseball. It's really kind of just like a symbolic thing, whatever. But I actually think he would be a good team captain. I think it's like he already is the team captain. He just doesn't have the C on his jersey. But like you said, I mean, David Ortiz was never the captain of this team. Was he kind of the captain of this team? 100%. Dustin Pedroia definitely was kind of the team captain of this team. Never wore the C on his jersey. Mike Trout would probably be the captain of the Angels.
Interesting, looking at the Yankee captains, you know, their tenures weren't long.
No.
A lot of these guys were captain, you know.
Frank Chance was the captain for 1 year in 1913.
Right. Babe Ruth, 1922. Most of these guys, you know, Greg Nettles was three seasons, well, until he was traded. Willie Randolph and Ron Guidry were co-captains from 86 to 88. Mattingly, 91 to 95. And then you have Jeter, 2003 to 2014. He's the longest tenured Yankee captain and the last one. And I almost feel like it's fitting that he would be the last one ever. I don't feel like they need a captain.
I feel like the Red Sox don't, like, need a captain, but I think it would be like kind of a nice ornamental thing. Like I said, I mean, Xander's already the team captain. He's just not the team captain, you know, like all of the attributes that Remy described on the broadcast of like the team leader, the guy you can go to for advice, the guy who sets the example, like that's what a team captain should be.
See, for so us, he's that's already Brett doing Gardner that. Right now, except for his, you know, Brett Gardner is the one
the one banging on the dugout roofs at all the ballparks.
Yeah. But the one who he's pulled so many pranks on Tyler Wade that Tyler Wade was joking about trying to get Brett Gardner arrested for harassment because he's been pranking him so much this spring training. Because in case Red Sox fans don't know, Brett Gardner is an all-time prank puller. He's like legendary among Yankee players and former Yankee players for just being a prank pest. And I think it's so funny because we didn't know this about him until a few years ago. And this makes me appreciate him so much more as a player and as a person, because, you know, we were talking about how long the grind is in baseball and how the season seems never ending. Like for fans, it's great because we have the longest season out of all the sports, and
oh, I love it.
This sport so much that you never want the season to end. But for the guys, it's a long grind, and yeah, you got to break it up somehow and you have to make it fun. And I just love that he does that. It's so funny.
Yeah. I mean, I am not a Brett Gardner fan, obviously. And I'm actually remembering April 2019, it was the last game Eovaldi pitched before he went on the injured list. He pitched a gem and the Red Sox were leading up until pretty late in the game. And then Gardner came in and gave up and hit a grand slam. And I was in New York. I wasn't at the game, but I was in New York. I was visiting my best friend who is a diehard Yankees fan. And we were at my favorite restaurant in the West Village, and it's an Israeli restaurant. And we both speak Hebrew. So we were in there, and whenever we're in there and we speak Hebrew, there's this one waiter who will just give us like unlimited free wine. So by the time that grand slam rolled around, we were pretty enjoying ourselves. I'll just say it that way. And he hit that grand slam and she has a picture of me just like chugging red wine in like absolute depression mode, because that was just like the theme of the 2019 season. It's just like, you know, they're ahead until whatever, and then they just get absolutely demolished because their bullpen couldn't handle it. I also thought it was kind of funny that Mattingly and Jeter are your last back-to-back captains, and now they work together on the Marlins. Like, you've got Jeter and Mattingly just like made the move down to Miami. Like, they just like made the snowbird move. And
yeah, Mattingly was my guy. I loved Don Mattingly growing up. He was my favorite player. I mean, that's the case for a lot of us who grew up in the 80s. I was Mattingly. My brother loved Dave Winfield. And when Mattingly first started showing up for old timers games, I was in my seats at the old stadium, and I sat in front of a bunch of guys, the same bunch of guys for 10 years. And every old timers day, they'd be like, uh-oh, Stace is about to freak out, because as soon as they introduced Don Mattingly, I'd jump up out of my seat and start yelling like a crazy person, because I loved him so much. The day that they made the announcement that the Yankees hired him to be, what was he, bench coach or hitting coach? Now I can't even remember because it was so long ago. I saw it on the back of the Daily News that this guy had on the A-train, and I said, holy out loud. And the guy started laughing because he knew exactly what I was referring to. And he gave me a thumbs up because we looked like we were around the same age. And I was so excited when they hired Don Mattingly. But yeah, they every year, uh-oh, Stace is about to freak out. Watch out. You know, they pretend that they were scared of me because of Mattingly. Yeah, I loved him. I was so bummed that he never got to win with them. I've been wanting to tattoo his 1986 slash line somewhere on my body for like years. I might do it at some point.
I'm Jewish, so we're not supposed to get tattoos, like, because if you get a tattoo, you can't be buried in a Jewish cemetery.
Right.
But I've always said that if I was going to get a tattoo, it would be a 34 for David Ortiz. Mm-hmm. Or like a boss, like, or a little tiny pair of like socks. All right. So Stace, I don't know if you are a betting woman, but Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football, thankfully, is over, but we've got the NBA. Yeah, I don't like football. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. And of course, baseball is coming back, and BetOnline has updated their odds for the major league season. You can bet on everything from who's going to win the MVP, Cy Young, Rookie of the Year. They've got it all. And they even cover things like award shows, TV shows, and reality TV. So if you're someone who likes The Bachelor or the Grammys or the Oscars, you can bet on that too. They've got real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. And we've got a promo code for you. That promo code is Locked On. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.
Fantasy baseball addicts, you now have a new resource to help give you an advantage in your leagues. Locked On Fantasy Baseball. It's a daily fantasy baseball podcast hosted by veteran fantasy analyst Scott Cullen, who uses data and nearly two decades of fantasy baseball experience to offer the strategies and waiver wire pickups that lead to league wins. Season-long fantasy, dynasty leagues, DFS, Locked On Fantasy Baseball covers it all. Subscribe to Locked On Fantasy Baseball wherever you get podcasts.
Okay, before we wrap up, obviously we are still trapped indoors most of the time. Something I've been doing a lot is just watching sports movies, because obviously I can't go to sporting events. So we've been watching a lot of sports movies, and I was curious, you and I, we're going to go down the list of ballparks used in film and television. We're going to talk about the best ones, because, and it's going to be alphabetical, shout out Wikipedia for this provision. The best baseball movies, or non-baseball movies, honestly, the best movies filmed in ballparks. Kicking it off, I've actually never seen Angels in the Outfield.
What?
I know. I feel like I've seen part of it at a certain point, but we didn't have cable growing up and we weren't a big TV family. So I've seen the BBC version of Pride and Prejudice like 800 times, because my parents bought the VHS collection. Like, we still have it in the house today. I don't know why.
That's funny.
Oh, actually, we still have a VHS player too. So
I love that movie. I mean, some people think it's schlocky, and it is, but
a lot of sports movies are schlocky, though.
Right. I adore that movie. I really do.
Interestingly enough, they didn't use the interior. They just used the exterior in sky shots.
Right. Right. And that happens in a lot of movies. Yeah. Yeah. We'll see that as we go through the list.
All right. I did not remember that Deuce Bigalow, Male Gigolo had a baseball scene.
Amy Poehler being Tourette's and screaming out ball hair.
Oh, I don't know if that would get made now.
No. Yeah.
It's all coming back to me now. Mm-hmm. Shout out Celine Dion. All right. RIP the Astrodome.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know any of these movies.
Well, the Bad News Bears one, I do remember. I mean, I haven't seen it in a really long time, but I remember that being at the Astrodome. That was a big deal, especially back in the late 70s.
I'm very curious to watch this made-for-TV film from 1977 called Murder at the World Series. That sounds like my kind of ridiculous movie.
But there's no link to it, so it doesn't even have information. We have to look that up on IMDb.
I'm gonna pull a Liam Neeson and I'm gonna find that movie. I will find you.
I'm interested to see who's in it, because 1977 made-for-TV film could be anyone.
It's gonna be John Travolta.
I think I would have known that.
Okay, so we've got a movie that I also haven't seen called The Slugger's Wife.
Oh yeah, I haven't seen that in a really long time, but I did see it when it was out. Yes.
Wow,
that was
Randy Quaid and Rebecca De Mornay. Interesting.
It was an interesting movie.
Yeah. All right. So A League of Their Own was filmed. We got multiple locations for that. We've got Bossy Field in Evansville, Indiana, as the home of the Racing Bells. You and I love A League of Their Own. Mm-hmm. I love that movie.
How do you not? I mean, do you know people who don't like that movie? Because if you do, you need to not be friends with them.
So Busch Stadium in Indianapolis, Indiana for Eight Men Out, which I haven't seen in a really long time.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen that in a really long time either.
But, you know, it's fitting that there's a movie that was made about team owners not paying their players, because that's where we are in baseball now.
Exactly.
Candlestick Park, RIP, two movies. Experiment in Terror, never seen it. And The Fan, also never seen that.
I don't think I've seen it.
Starring Robert De Niro and Wesley Snipes.
Yeah, Wesley Snipes was the baseball player that Robert De Niro was stalking. And
interesting.
I don't think I've seen it from beginning to end, but I've seen clips of it, and it's freaky. It's scary. De Niro does scary really well.
Yeah. I'm gonna add that to the list. This is hilarious. Okay. City Field. The first movie listed is Sharknado 2.
Yeah. Dodger Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if people will know this, played a very big role in saving a guy's life in a way. Because when Larry David filmed scenes for Curb Your Enthusiasm at a Dodger game, this guy who was suspected in a murder had an alibi because he was at Dodger Stadium while they were filming that episode.
Wow.
And he proved that he was innocent of that crime because he was in the footage from that episode.
That is awesome. And mm-hmm. someone should make that into a movie.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the most amazing things I've ever heard.
That is awesome. That is like a really great alibi too.
Uh-huh.
Dodger Stadium's been in a lot of movies. Naked Gun, The Sandlot, Fast and the Furious, Superman Returns, Transformers. Also the old TV show Mr. Ed, which my dad loved. Doubleday Field is in A League of Their Own as well, which is not surprising for the reason that they all go to Cooperstown.
Mm-hmm.
I cry at the end of that movie every time. It makes me want to hug my sister. Yeah, I love that movie. All right. The Creme de la Creme, Fenway Park. You might not agree with that statement, but it has been in a lot of movies and also TV shows. It was in Handmaid's Tale, apparently, which I don't watch, but apparently they filmed it, Handmaid's Tale. So obviously, okay, Field of Dreams. I have to say, I think Field of Dreams might be my favorite of these films because it's old Fenway Park.
Right. Before
it's
all
like
the changes. Yeah.
1989 Fenway Park, like not fancy, no monster seats, really kind of decrepit and like in the era of will this ballpark survive Fenway Park? And I love that. I think that was 4 years before I was born. And it's the whole Boston thing, actually, because, you know, when he's going to find Terrence Mann, you know, you're seeing the old trolleys and you're seeing like Huntington Avenue. That's like where I grew up. So seeing it like that from a time that I can't remember, and, you know, my early childhood, kind of that era of like very gritty Boston, that is so cool to me. It's like a time capsule. Though I will say, I'm sure in 30 years when I watch Fever Pitch, it'll feel the same way.
I refuse to see that movie.
That's fine. You wouldn't like it.
Yeah.
I quite enjoy it. You wouldn't like it. Yeah, actually, no, I will say, you know, I know you wouldn't like it because it's 2004, but there is very little Yankee in that movie.
Yeah, no.
He does have Yankee toilet paper, though.
Yeah, no, I'd rather be waterboarded than watch that movie.
My sister got me a gift for Hanukkah a couple years ago. She got me a roll of Yankee toilet paper as like a gag gift. I didn't use it. I have it like as like a memorabilia kind of situation, but she did send me to my apartment in LA Yankee toilet paper. All right. We got Tiger Stadium. Interesting.
Now, I like how many times Tiger Stadium played Yankee Stadium.
That's what I was just about to ask you. Why is Tiger Stadium? Also, it's in the movie Hardball, which I don't think I've ever seen, as Chicago Field. So I guess it was nondescript enough that they could make it a lot of different.
Hardball was Keanu Reeves and I think Diane Lane. I only remember that because it was one of my accounts at NBC. I had.
It's Diane Lane, Keanu Reeves, and D.B. Sweeney.
Yeah, I had movie accounts and Hardball was one of my, I'll never forget that. I had files of it for all the different stations that aired those commercials. So yeah, that's the only reason I don't think I saw that. I think I saw bits and pieces of it once when it was on like maybe HBO.
But okay, we recorded for an hour and 10 minutes. We've been on Zoom for 2 hours and 15 minutes. We've been recording for an hour and 20 minutes. So this is going to end up being a two-parter. So yes. If you're listening, subscribe so you never miss an episode. I could literally talk to Stacey all day, but we both have things to do and pets to feed. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, you can follow Locked On Red Sox on Twitter at @LO_Red Sox. You can follow Locked On Yankees. It's just at Locked On Yankees, I believe, right?
Yes. All one word.
All one word. You're so lucky. Mine is not one word. Mine's not even a word. It's just @LO_Red Sox. You can follow me on Twitter at @GFSTIRR1. You can follow Stacey on Twitter. You're at @StaceScots, right?
Yes.
And I love that you change like your name on Twitter all the time. I think right now you're Staceball Diamond.
Yes.
I love it. I love it. You do this like I remember Halloween, you had like a spooky themed one. I love it. So creative. Can't do that with mine. It's too long. Nothing rhymes with Gabrielle. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. Subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'll be back tomorrow with part two of our Division Day crossover.
So that's it for this episode of Locked On Yankees, which is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'd like to remind you that you can subscribe to this show and Locked On Red Sox in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Himalaya, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. And when you get into your car, you can tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On today. One more thing, if you could be so kind, please rate the podcast and spread the word about this podcast to your fellow Yankee fans. We would really appreciate it. Enjoy your Wednesday, and I will talk to you all tomorrow.